for the U.S. listeners, happy Thanksgiving. Well, for at the time of recording, that was yesterday, but we'll just call it the holiday season. Johnny, our team blockchain super marvel, gets to feel like he celebrates his own holiday just before Christmas comes. So we are definitely in that time of year, and this is covering the November 24th Digital Bytes newsletter. Johnny is on the air, live, and ready to go.
Fantastic. Thanks, James. Good to be back on the airways on Cyber.fm, and really pleased. And we're actually going to go out of the world this afternoon. We're going to be talking to a chap I've known for a number of years, Grant Blaisdell, who's going to be talking to us about sort of the opportunity and the ability to invest in space assets, which is of interest to me because near my hometown of Guildford, which is just south of London, we have probably one of Europe, certainly the UK's leading space centres, part of Surrey University. And they've, I don't know why, but it just has become a real sort of mecca for research and satellites and stuff like that. So I know a couple of guys that work out there, so I know they're going to be really interesting to hear about that. And I know you're keen on that whole space sector as well, aren't you?
Oh, I'm all about it. I've donated to projects in the past. I've stayed active in some, there's one project that is going out to monitor the amount of space garbage that's going on and, you know, actual junk that we have floating around in the stratosphere, I guess. I'm no astronaut, but definitely anything in favor of to the moon.
Bud Lightyear. I bet you had a Bud Lightyear when you were a kid.
Now, I'm 46 years old. If anything, I had Star Trek or, yeah, probably Star Trek.
Star Trek, yeah. Okay, well, back to more mundane matters. Interesting, and this is very pertinent for, you know, as we say, our cousins across the pond in the good old USA. And in this week's Digital Bytes, we were looking at, you know, can what's happened in the past, some sort of insight or a preview of what might happen? And we were looking at what's happened with money, and can it sort of portend as the future role of digital currencies? And it was interesting, and this is something we have covered before in Digital Bytes, and looking at the history of reserve currencies of the world. So as I'm sure all the listeners are aware, that, you know, the US dollar is by far the most dominant and by far the most used currency globally. But it's only had that sort of status for sort of 90 odd years. Nearly 100 years, I should say. But before that, it was pound sterling, the stuff that we have here in Blighty. And, you know, before that, we had the French franc, but following the Napoleonic Wars and the defeat of Waterloo, you know, the pound took over from that. But the French actually took over from the Dutch, who were fantastic at sort of opening up the Asian continent and trading. And, you know, from such a small country, you know, did amazing things. And then before that, you had the Spanish real, and the Spanish obviously opened up, you know, South America, and, you know, did some good things and some not so good things, which tends to happen in empires. But before then, we had the Portuguese real. So going back to 1450, we've now seen six different reserve currencies. And what we find is that the average time period is about 94 years. And then what tends to happen, they tend to issue a lot of debt. Well, that's what's been happening now. They tend to think that, you know, they're invincible and nothing else is going to change. And if we actually go back just in the US, and this is really important, I think, if we go back to 1862 in America, there were over 7,000 different types of US dollars in circulation. So there were lots of corporations, lots of banks, lots of institutions that were issuing their own type of dollar. And in 1863, the National Currency Act, which became known as the National Banking Act, was passed. And essentially they said, right, that's it. We're just going to have the dollar, the US dollar. And it's thought, I thought this was quite interesting, the actual sign of US dollar, they thought it actually came from the saying pieces of eight, peces of ocho. And they took, and that, which means obviously eight silver peso coins for one Spanish real. And they abbreviated the PS, and that's where they think the dollar sign came from, which was quite interesting. And the reason I mention that is that we have a situation at the moment where Amazon, which I'm sure most of the readers will be familiar with, hugely successful company, they've decided that they're no longer going to be using Visa as a method of payment. And so we just did a very, very simple calculation and said, well, let's assume 20% of Visa's revenue, and their Q3 figures for 2021 were just over 110 billion. And if we assume that 20% of that income, 110 billion, was facilitated using the Visa network, and then we make another assumption that that costs 0.1%, and then we multiply that by four, assuming Visa isn't used and something else, that could generate next $88 million a year of profit for Amazon. And that something else could well be a US-backed digital currency, which ironically, a digital currency, which most people think, well, that's volatile, it's a bit iffy, it's used for nefarious activities, and it's risky and dangerous. But a US-backed digital currency, so the 100% of your money is held by US dollars, arguably is much, much safer than putting your money with a US bank. Because when you put money with a US bank, what happens is that they then lend the money out to other people. But they don't just lend your dollar or a pound or a yen or a Swiss franc. They lend a multiple. So they may lend out 10 or 20. And we had the crazy situation with a bank in the UK called Royal Bank of Scotland. And they were lending out 40 pounds for every £1 that was deposited, which is great when the markets are all, you know, firing up. But what happens when we start to see interest rates go up or the economy turns down, then people don't repay their loans. And that's when the banks have a problem. So, you know, there is an interesting sort of question. Do you trust and do you want to put your money in a bank and you don't know where they're lending it? Or do you want to hold your money effectively in a vehicle that is 100% backed by cash? And I think what we're going to see is companies like Amazon come out and start issuing their own currencies. So we're going to have a situation maybe going back to the 1860s, whereby there could be hundreds of these corporate treasury payment systems from, you know, people like, you know, Tencent, Alibaba in China, or maybe it may be L'Oreal in France, or it could be Siemens in Germany, or it could be BP or Shell, and, you know, these major international companies, because it's a much quicker and faster and cheaper way for them to move money around, and arguably much a safer way for doing it. So we were kind of saying, well, what's happened in the past, can that sort of indicate what we might see coming forward into the future?
I just learned out of anything where my dollar sign came from. No, you blew my mind earlier. I actually had to Google it.
I thought it's just really interesting. And if there's a commercial reason for them to do it, and this whole thing of in depositing a dollar and then $10 or $20 gets lent out, what that's known as is fractional banking.
Right.
Because the banks only have a fraction of your money. So it's certainly the case in Europe and certainly the case in the UK. If you go into a bank in the UK and say, look, I've got £5,000. Can I have it, please? They're almost certainly going to ask you, well, could you come back tomorrow, madam? Or could you come back tomorrow, sir? We don't have it. And if it's a lot of money, they may ask you to come back in 3 or 4 days. And I think you might find that's the case in the US. You know, maybe it's $10 or $20,000. But if you went into a bank and said, I'd like $50,000 in cash, the chances are they just don't have it. And it's not just a matter of they just don't have it at the branch. It's just that they've got to then, you know, say, OK, so we've got to make sure, because otherwise what we could do is it's called a run on the bank. Lots and lots of people want their money out. But if they've only got £1 for every $30, $40 they've lent out, or $1, I should say, you can then see it's going to take a while for them to unwind their positions and then give their depositors the money they want back, because they're, but this system is only, it's only 50 years old. So this isn't something which has been around for, you know, for hundreds of years. It's the way in which our banking system operates, which is fine, but one does have to question, you know, given the huge amount of debt we now have in our economies all over the world, what happens when interest rates go up? You know, the European Central Bank here, they have around about nearly 20% of all of Europe's corporate debt. And if those companies start falling over, heaven forbid, if we get another outbreak of COVID or something like that, you know, as we're talking today on the, you know, on Friday, November the 26th, you know, there's concerns that there's this new variant, this new strain of COVID, which is coming out of South Africa, but it's already been reported in Latin America. It's already been reported this afternoon here in Belgium, in Europe. So if this comes out and we find this is a really, you know, a really nasty strain and the vaccines that we've got aren't working, that's going to create chaos. And we've got a situation at the moment whereby inflation is well above what the central bankers wanted to set their target. So if interest rates start going up, then these companies are going to struggle to pay their debts. And so that puts a question mark. And this all relates back to digital currencies and blockchain technology, because you could have an alternative, and companies that are sitting on, you know, potentially hundreds of millions, or in the case of people like Apple and Facebook and Google, et cetera, they're sitting on billions. And why would they trust the bank with their billions? That they probably would rather have it in a safer place. So perversely, digital assets can actually be safer and much more transparent than relying on a bank.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's going to fast forward the goals of unbanked and decentralization and things like that, because it's almost like we're getting forced into it.
Yeah, but it's all. It reminds me, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before. It reminds me of in the UK we have a child's. It's like a fairy tale, a story about the emperor has no clothes, and the emperor is parading around amongst all his subjects, and there's a little child that stands up and says, "Mummy, mummy, the emperor doesn't have any clothes." And he hasn't got any clothes, but because everyone is so intimidated or so used to it or scared, they won't actually say the emperor doesn't have any clothes. But we have a situation now where people have got used to, oh yeah, I've got a whole lot of debt on my credit card, I've got a massive mortgage, or I can't afford to buy a car, but I'll put it on, you know, on hire purchase. And then all of a sudden people say, yeah, but how are you going to pay for that? Well, don't worry, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. Well, it is okay when interest rates are almost zero. But I can remember, I'm 58, and I can remember not that long ago, interest rates were 15%. And people in London were literally handing their keys back to the bank and walking away from their homes, saying, I can't afford to pay to live in this house. And I'm talking about, you know, prime property in London was falling by 20, 30%. So when people say, you know, it can't happen, it has happened in our lifetimes. Sometimes it pays just to say, well, wow, if that were to happen, how exposed am I? How risky is it? And will, in that case, will we then see other people turning to, maybe they'll turn to our guest coming up, Grant, and they'll want to buy assets based in space. Or maybe they'll turn to some of these other cryptocurrencies that we see, where a lot of people are saying, well, you know, things like Ethereum and Bitcoin and some of the bigger cryptocurrencies, that they will prove to be a much safer. And some people are saying, like Bitcoin, James, it's an inflation hedge, a bit like gold. Well, time will tell whether that's correct or not, but certainly they're an alternative type of exposure for people to consider in the time of some sort of crisis.
I recall my parents, I want to say it is the mid-80s, but they were refinance.
Yeah.
And it was like they were playing, I think we got like a new home equity loan every year for like 5 years. I was young, but I remember them arguing about credit scores, and it was the house that they were refinancing. So it's probably that you're talking about, the 80s in America anyway.
That happened, you know, in right across the world. And actually, you know, talking today, it's Black Friday. It's normally seen as a good thing. It's in the sense it means people have, in America, you have the day off. And to be fair, you Americans don't have many days off. You work flipping hard, and you're out there spending. And
we don't get Flag Day. We don't even have a Boxing Day. I think every other country does.
but I wonder if Black, you know, but also it's been quite a black day for the stock markets. We've seen some, certainly here in Europe, we've seen some of the biggest falls since March 2020, at the start of the COVID pandemic, because people are worried that, you know, what's going to happen. And I don't want to sensationalize this, what's happening in Africa. And I fear that, you know, the COVID-19, and you've, at a personal level, James, I know you've struggled for a while with that flipping COVID cough that you've had.
I ain't doing that.
It's not going to go away. Yeah. Well, it's not going to go away in the short term, but I think we have a bigger problem facing ourselves, and that is this mountain of debt that governments have just given money to people, and that money is now sloshing around the system, and it's driving up prices, and that's encouraging people to start putting up interest rates. Turkey this week, they said that, no, we're not going to put up interest rates because we think the best way is to keep them interest rates low, because that's going to stimulate our economy. Bang! You saw the Turkish lira fall, biggest fall that it's seen for a long, long time. I think it's down about 40% just this year against the US dollar. So, you know, people talk about volatility in the crypto market. Well, you've got big volatility in the foreign exchange market, which is much, much bigger and much, much more liquid. So we're in very interesting times, James, I would suggest.
And I think that market isn't so publicly exposed to the regular people, right? So like you said, today's Black Friday. In the United States, we woke up, Bitcoin down 10%, Ethereum down 10%. You know, even my son was like, well, they're just cashing out to go shopping. It's Black Friday. That could very well be the answer.
Could well be.
But so now we're seeing our brand new economy affected by real world tangible products, tangible debt, right? Interest rates. We're starting to already maybe, I hate to say it, borrow from our crypto savings to get out of debt.
But there's huge amount of money just flowing around. You know, if we look at just what's happening of investments, we wrote about this, about amount of money going into this sort of crypto sector. So incredibly, you know, many people will be familiar with a firm called Andreessen Horowitz, fantastically successful investor based out in Silicon Valley. And early this year, they raised $2.2 billion. Just so they said, we've got some ideas. Can you give us your money? Because we're going to go invest it for you. And they raised $2.2 billion. And then, God, blow me down. The founder of Coinbase, a chap called Fred Ersham, and his partner, Matt Hung, they've just raised $2.5 billion in their new fund. And it's purely going to be investing in companies that are exposed to what we're talking about, to digital assets. And, you know, they reckon their first fund that Ersham launched back in 2018, he raised something like $400 million. That's already worth $10 billion. So you can see the multiplier effect. And I know we'll be talking to Grant about this. And I know he's already saying we're seeing pockets of people that have accumulated huge amounts of wealth in the digital asset sector, the crypto sector. And now they're looking to diversify, hence the idea of sort of buying NFTs. And we've seen how that market has exploded so much. And now there's an opportunity to invest basically in space assets, which is, you know, really, really, really quite interesting. And to put that into some sort of perspective, the biggest fund manager, you know, in the world is a company called BlackRock, again, from the USA. They were looking to invest in the second biggest economy in the world, which is China, where there's a huge number of really interesting investment opportunities. And it only managed to raise $1 billion. So the biggest fund manager could only raise $1 billion, yet a couple of guys based out, you know, with not a huge track record, picked up, you know, $2.5 billion to invest in this new market. So you can see where the smart money is beginning to go. And the traditional investment houses are taking more and more attention is being paid to these digital assets. And it's not just cryptocurrencies. They're digitizing real estate and equities and bonds and commodities and online gaming and ideas and data. And so it's opening up very, very different investment opportunities for people.
Now, we are definitely proving the fact that every single thing, no matter what it is, every single thing has a value to it.
Yes. Yeah.
No, very really left to the people that know how to monetize something like that. If you could monetize my thoughts, more power to you.
If we can monetize your skill base, you're a musician or an artist, and then every time someone trades your asset, your IP, your intellectual property, and you, the person that owns that, gets a little bit of income on an ongoing basis. So instead of selling a picture and it gets sold for, you know, $100,000 and that's it, but if that picture gets sold again in 2 or 3 or 5 years time, then you, the artist, will get a little bit of that income again and again. So the person that was responsible for creating, whether it's a song or a movie or a, it doesn't matter what it is, any intellectual property can enjoy the benefits on an ongoing basis. That seems a lot fairer and more democratic way of carrying on, as opposed to someone cornering it and buying up all your IP when you're not very well known, and then they make a fortune out of your intellect and out of your creativity. So the whole thing seems to be more democratic if you look at it that way.
So what's your next big move? You got Christmas coming up right now. I don't know about you, but one of my goals is to make $2.5 billion. Hopefully Fred and Matt are fans of this show. What are you going to do for the next 29 days? How are you going to make that money?
I suppose, you know, the challenge is keeping on top of all the stuff that's going on, James, sort of joking apart. It's, you know, it's moving so quickly. Things are changing so much. And one of the slight frustrations is that I was at a dinner yesterday with some of the biggest private equity managers in Europe, and if not the world, and were just asked to say a few things about some of the stuff that's going on. And they basically said, yeah, well, blockchain's Bitcoin, and it's still a little bit iffy and dodgy. And you think, oh, no, come on. We had those sort of conversations back in 2016.
It's been a decade. Later.
Yeah. You've got to start looking at, as you know, as we're talking to Grant about this, you know, you don't have to be a fan of cryptocurrencies. You don't have to buy any cryptocurrencies. But please do yourself a favor and try and understand the technology that creates those cryptocurrencies. And then how can you use that technology to make your local neighborhood, your business, your society more eco-friendly? So it improves the ESG, the environmental, social, and corporate goals, make it a better place for us, because you can use this technology along with a very old established economic theory called nudge economics. You nudge people to change their behavior. So a loyalty scheme, if I give you a loyalty scheme, you'll come back and you'll fly on American Airlines again, or you'll shop in, you know, in a casino in France again, because you're being encouraged to do them. You'll get in your car and you're nudged because, you know, out of the side of my car comes the seatbelt and it's kind of hits the shoulder. Oh, yeah, I must put the seatbelt on. You're nudged to change your behavior. And what digital assets can do, they can give you these nudges. They can give you these rewards and say, okay, we're going to encourage you to change your behavior in a certain way, which, you know, has good and bad. But I think that's something we're beginning to see, if you like, the rewards of that, your data, your information, instead of being held by, you know, these big multinational corporations, you'll be able to monetize your data and you'll get paid for it. And therefore, it's going to be a much more inclusive and hopefully less monopolistic environment that we're going to be living in going forward for certainly our kids and our grandchildren.
I think generations, as they go on, that nudge becomes the norm after so many attempts.
Absolutely. So like, I get in the car and the kids say, "Dad, put your seatbelt on.
Right. You're like, really?
You know, you say, okay, sure. You know, I haven't got out the drive yet. And they're asking me to put the seatbelt on. So yeah, you're right. It becomes the norm. And that's a good norm. But, you know, I can remember, it's not that long ago, you know, your refuge or your garbage, your household waste, you know, you just all go into one dustbin. And now, you know, many countries, you know, you have three or four different types of recycling that you're able to recycle a lot of your products that you've got and your rubbish. And that's now become the norm. And people say, well, that's what you've got to do. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The nudges turn into the norm. But if you've got an incentive, either, you know, a stick, you got to pay your taxes, let's say, that's a nudge economics. Or it's a sort of a carrot, we're going to encourage you to come back and spend more time in our supermarkets or airlines or whatever it may well be. But to do that, we'll give you an incentive. So that's the whole, that loyalty area is a huge market, which I think we're going to see a lot more activity going on over the next couple of years in this space. So after the break, James, we've got Grant Blaisdell coming from Kopernik, and he's going to be talking to us about how individuals, you know, that Joe Soap, man and lady in the street, can invest a little bit of money and start getting exposure to some of the commercial opportunities in space. So we've got him coming up after the break. But meanwhile, if you'd like a copy of Digital Bytes, we send it out every Wednesday, then just, you know, contact myself, Johnny Fry, JONNYFRY on LinkedIn, or James Tiley, and you're at cyber.fm, and we'll happily put you on the list and you can see some of the other things that we write about every week, looking at sort of how, where and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used all across the world.
Hey, just wait till things in space become the norm. Like right now, you know when to look up, if you want to see the ISS float by. I say float by and it's doing 15,000 miles an hour. But you know, there's at least an app out there that will tell you, hey, go look up at the sky. That's normal now. Yep. You know, 30 years ago, I don't, maybe not 30, but I don't know. At one point, nobody would ever think to, hey, I want to go see the ISS, you know, or any type of spaceship.
I know. No, incredible. Okay. Well, James, before we go, I just want to say a quick thank you, because it is your holiday season. You've given up your time on Black Friday, so appreciate that. And I hope the other, you know, certainly listeners in around the world, stay safe. You know, make sure you tune in next week to the Digital Bytes Show on cyber.fm.
That's right. Thank you for the plug. It is the holiday season. I think later on we'll remind people that the Christmas channel is going live. Just when you thought you weren't ready for Christmas. Good stuff.
Santa's on his way.
He's on his way. It's Santa.
Okay, we'll catch up after the break, James.
You are listening to the brand spanking new cyber.fm. The FM stands for free money.
Hey, guys. Part two to Digital Bytes. Johnny Fry, JONNY Fry, and myself, James Tiley with Cyber FM Radio. We are, Johnny brought on Grant Blaisdell. He's the CEO of Kopernik. I hope I said that right. I should have asked. But this is a good one, Johnny got. This guy is going to the moon, literally. So, Johnny, why don't you bring Grant on?
Yeah, Grant, welcome to Digital Bytes Show on cyber.fm. And yeah, as James said, you've done a really interesting article, and you know, as if the world wasn't big enough for NFTs and crypto, you want to go to the moon, or actually you want to go into space. And so welcome to the show, Grant.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Good to have you back on the air again. And Grant, so you've done an article entitled "Crypto Will Soon Let You Own Assets in Space." What, you know, what are you smoking, mate? Well, you can't own space assets, can you?
Well, that's one thing that we're looking to create, is take away kind of this, first off, enable access to the market for the general commercial market or even the average person, but take away the commercial engagement and the value of space being viewed exclusively through this scientific or technical utility, and move it into an asset class that can be moved and traded and create a whole new sort of economic reality, not just for space, but people on Earth as well.
Right. And you're actually just in the process of launching an NFT, which will help to pay for to go on a rocket, on one of SpaceX's rockets. And it's going to be a rover that's going to go to the moon next December. Come on, tell us a little bit about that. And what backs the NFT? How does it work for our listeners?
Well, this case is, I'll get into the specifics a little bit more. This one's not actually on the financing end. So our platform is segregated into two distinct solutions that are to solve the two distinct needs of the new space economy. One is commercialization, is extremely non-scalable, tiresome, takes months at a time. And the other one is that financing avenues are equally archaic, right? So we apply crypto to pretty much unlock those two needs. When it comes to that, this one actually sits on the commercialization end, because this rover exists. It's already contracted to go up to the moon this next year. Actually, the first rover to be on the South Pole of the moon and collecting data from there. So what we're doing is actually we're taking payload space that it has, and it actually starts with what we call parent NFT. So it's a single NFT that represents the sum of the payload space, which in this private sale is 3.4 kilos, right? And we're actually doing two things. We're proving an entirely new commercialization model for, in this case, space cargo, right, which is a churning, you know, steady commercial revenue generating part of the space economy. And the other one is that we're enabling for the first time the general market or even the average person to quote unquote own a piece of space and acquire a space asset. So technically, whether it's through the private sale or the public sale, it'll be the first time, you know, openly that someone can acquire ownership in space. In this case, it will be ownership in a rover that's on the moon, and it's going to be there forever because it's going to stay there. So once again, we're here to prove, you know, a new, let's say, digital economic operating system for the space economy, so that space companies can more easily commercialize, you know, their space assets, which we view as tokenized product services ownership in space, while at the same time enabling the general public and the general market to own it, because the space market is going to be, you know, the most important and technically the only unlimited market that's going to exist in mankind's history. And, you know, one thing crypto has shown is that it has created a whole new wealth class in a certain sense. And we don't want the space economy to leave out, let's say, the general person and market, like a lot of markets have developed over time. And blockchain and applications of crypto really enable that.
So this is a really good example of how the technology, you know, blockchain technology and the digital assets that it can create, in this case, partial ownership of a rover that's going to be up in space. So rather than buying something in the metaverse or in some sort of online game, I could actually own a small stake in a moon rover that's going to be up there for, you know, as long as it doesn't get a bloody, I don't know, an asteroid to blow up the moon or something. So all the time that doesn't happen, I can say I own a chunk of that moon rover. Is it? Is that, have I got that correct?
Yeah, you can. And, you know, it's the
That's
NFTs
pretty cool.
are tradable and they're also divisible, which means, let's say I, in the public sale, which that's for, you know, pretty much anybody can come on and buy. We, of course, KYC and vet certain people from certain places, et cetera. But once you buy that NFT, let's say you buy 50 grams, you can chop off 10 grams and you can sell it on the secondary market. Right. So where democratization is a big part of this. So in the public sale, there's practically no minimum. So if you have $100, you can own a piece of space.
Okay. And on the more commercial side, if someone or an organization or company actually wanted to, you know, be involved in some form of, I don't know, collect something from the moon or do some sort of experiment that they wanted to test, then potentially there's actually space on the space rocket. There's actually payload. You can actually physically then send something up onto the moon to carry out some research for sort of presumably sort of a company. They could potentially do that. So it's not just limited to, you know, a government, which historically space exploration has been all about, you know, the Chinese, the Russians, the Yanks, the Europeans. It's been government led pretty much to date. So it can now be sort of private companies that can do this, or publicly quoted companies can start getting involved in space.
Yeah, there's a lot more kind of private, let's say, aspects happening than people see, but that's very limited to entities with the access and the know and space companies, pretty much, right? Our whole thing with this private sale, which we're launching next week in at Art Basel and Bit Basel, Miami, is, you know, more catered towards the general commercial market, the brands, the art market, gaming companies, et cetera, to really, you know, open up the space market to, let's say, the general commercial market once again. So, you know, of course, for example, Nokia already has payload on it and they're putting up a 4G LTE broadband thing and they're going to be testing, you know, internet aspects and connectivity from the moon, right?
What's LTE mean?
Like, you know, 4G LTE, like the, you know, it's the internet bandwidth or whatever.
Well, so you can use your mobile phone on space?
I wouldn't go that far, but they're going to be doing some interesting stuff with it. You know, I'm not going to make any promises, but we're, you know, exploring how to do certain, you know, transactional elements. But that's secondary. You know, for us, what's the most important thing is, you know, create the new foundation and operating system and platform to where the market can engage and acquire space assets.
So it's kind of showing that, you know, the use of these digital assets, it's almost, you know, the scope is almost the size of your imagination, because we're now talking about things, you know, there's obviously we've been online gaming has been around for a while. And, you know, the metaverse is getting more and more attention. But now, you know, so you got physical things like we saw recently, a Michelangelo painting had an NFT on it from the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. So that's something very tangible. We then got the sort of the metaverse with online gaming. And now we're talking about going back with physical things. And actually, in theory, there's all sorts of things you could do in space and have a exposure to.
Yeah, I think we, you know, the way that we apply NFT specifically is more of what you're going to see long term, like the core, like backbone of the digital market, what place NFTs will have in that, which, for example, you know, you brought up the physical thing, but, you know, a long term, majority of our transactions on the platform are going to be around, in our viewpoint, like just from scale, is going to be around satellite data and imagery. Right. Yeah. So we actually apply NFTs and you can there's an article that talks about how we're kind of initially working to apply this. But we apply NFTs to acquire licenses and access to satellite data and imagery. Right. Yeah. So you own a unique license. It's when the NFT within the NFT is the unique access directly to that database or data set. Right. So only that entity with that NFT can access that, and they'll preload, you know, your license accordingly in it, right? And for the space economy, that's great. You know, you're dealing with lots of data that's sensitive, you know, and security around it's very important. So,
but some of that data is worth a lot of money, and that can generate ongoing income for owners of that data.
Yeah, and you know, there's loads of great companies. Like, you know, people think that the new space economy, like the private space economy, is just like Musk and Bezos shooting up their rockets, which it's not. There's hundreds and thousands of these entrepreneurs, you know, guys like Lunar Outpost, which is the rover company that's going up. So that's not our rover. We are, you know, look at us as the platform to where, you know, all the transactions and assets move in the space economy. But there's hundreds and thousands of these entrepreneurs, you know, really doing great stuff. And there's a bunch of companies that are focused on, you know, gathering this satellite data and being able to provide it in a manner that's much more usable and applicable by entities like agriculture companies. For example, hedge funds love data, space data. They just have a hard time really getting what they want. They're not sure how to do it. Right. So this is something that we see about a 2-year curve on to really kind of standardizing that. And, you know, I brought on great people like Kevin O'Connell, is the former director of the U.S. Department of Commerce for space, you know, to help me kind of break down these, who understand this value chain of players and kind of standardize and break down that segmentation so that all that stuff can be really streamlined and done well. And NFTs are going to sit at the heart of that. Right.
But okay, so Grant, so a little bit tongue in cheek here in terms of potentially you could actually get a solar paneled platform, exchange, whatever you want to call it. And that could be based in space. And that really is beyond the scope of any regulator. No one's going to be able to shut down a platform that's based in space. And that will allow everyone who wants to be engaged in this era to do so without the wrath of, you know, a regulators if they do get a bit shirty about this asset.
Two things to that. First off, you're still going to be on Earth doing these transactions. And if you are going to be in space, then, you know, you better be a space pirate or cowboy. So we're already talking about, you know, a future that we don't really see very well. So, I don't think, you know, unless you're like, you know, if you look at the big hackers in Russia, for example, that are kind of protected by the state, like unless you're one of those guys, I feel like you'd probably still get the wrath somewhere. But, you know, another thing is, you know, we got a partner, Avisa Space. I probably shouldn't have said that. But either way, they're working towards do the first company registration.
Got it.
On the moon. Right. Okay. So, you know, it's one reason why blockchain is also going to work and these applications we're doing is also going to work in space a lot better than it has in other major, you know, multi-billion dollar industries. Because people got to remember, like, space is already a $500 billion industry. So the interesting thing about space is it's pretty sparse on regulations and, you know, these decades and decades and decades of bureaucratic and administrative stuff put on top of each other. So the playing field is pretty open and, you know, these boundaries are going to be pushed, and, you know, like we were talking a little bit before the call, you know, the future great, I don't know if you can call them geopolitical in this case, but the future great geopolitical, you know, things that are going to be happening between nations, you know, conflicts, are going to be space oriented and ownership in space. And that's already happening on the moon a little bit, you know, China and the US are kind of getting into it around that.
Okay. And that's one thing I wanted to touch on because, actually there is a bit of, the new frontier, if I can be so bold and say, you call it that, is the potential conflict between the US and China. And, there is very much a space race going on and, you know, there's restrictions on potentially who can potentially buy and get exposure on this NFT. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we, for example, we block out Chinese nationals and companies because they're an American company can't be selling ownership to space assets to the Chinese. Right.
Okay. So any of our Chinese listeners, unfortunately, this is something they can't participate in. But I'm sure the Chinese will be very soon jumping on the next rocket and doing something like this because they don't hang around. But more importantly, then, so what we're seeing here is the ability to give exposure to space assets, and it's not just a matter of owning a bit of rock, but some of those assets, as you say, create very valuable income streams and data. So you mentioned hedge funds, and I'm just conscious, you know, we got 4.6 million listeners on Cyber FM. Most of those will not be hedge fund managers. Why does a hedge fund manager, why does a professional asset manager, why do they want data from space? What does it give them then? Can you give me just a couple of examples?
Some insights on bets they can make. You know, how is the weather going to be? How is the projected weather based off what's happening, based off what satellites are picking up? Logistics, should I invest? We had one we were talking to that wanted data over time and to determine whether an investment, a major real estate investment in this area around London would have been good based off, you know, like foot traffic, loads of different variables.
Right. Okay. So it literally gives them a different perspective, a new set of data to help them make investment decisions.
Yeah. I mean, you can predict, you know, like people, it's funny. I even had somebody kind of write to me in my DMs. I've known for years, smart guy too. But you know, he's like, cause we had the satellite Rhino thing where we want to apply, get better access to satellite imagery and data for, this organization, Save the Survivors, which, fights poaching and helps save endangered rhinos in South Africa. Right.
Right.
And Ryan to me, he's like, yeah, why this? Yeah. More money to Musk, more money to, you know, these people. And why don't we invest that money in green, you know, energy or technology? And, you know, I said, listen, like investment in space is, you know, really the greenest tech, right? Because if we really take satellite data and imagery to that aspect, then we can, you know, predict how this stuff is moving a lot better and take action a lot better way. So you know, you remember, Johnny, you know, you've known me for years. So, you know, we at CoinFirm, we helped open the first blockchain lab in Nigeria. I've always had an interesting focus around, you know, that region. So I've spoken to people who, you know, are looking at that around agriculture yields, et cetera. So as you mentioned earlier, the possibilities, you know, the NFT thing is one thing, but the possibility of applying these things in space is pretty limitless, just like, you know, the potential of that market itself.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I've had this conversation, two or three times this week, being in a couple of conferences here in the UK in London, and trying to say to people, look, you've got to understand the technology behind cryptocurrencies, but that you don't need to be a fan of cryptocurrencies per se. But if you understand the technology, then you can apply it to your industry, and your industry may be art, or it may be fashion, it may be finances, it may be healthcare. It doesn't matter what it is. But the technology, once you understand what it can do in your industry, then it starts to open up all sorts of possibilities. And I think very much what you're saying here, you know, you're using the technology of blockchain, you know, you're getting involved with NFTs, but that it doesn't start and stop there. There's many different ways, I'm sure, that, you know, once you start doing one thing, say, well, what about this? Or how about that? And it opens up a whole new area, which makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, listen, people even 3 months ago, let's say, didn't really get or thought I was kind of crazy. What we're doing is crazy. And even within 3 months, that kind of awareness has grown and has changed. So, you know, I know that this is going to happen, and it has to happen in some manner, eventually. But to your point, like, once again, I've never been a super interested in speculative aspect around crypto sort of person.
Yeah, no, ditto.
I like that. That's cool because it engages, you know, people. And once again, it builds some, you know, alternative class of wealth, et cetera, that isn't within, let's say, the grasp of incumbents at all times. But, you know, crypto is already creating its own incumbents, right? It's already creating its own kind of monopolistic central things. But I've always been more interested in how I got into blockchain originally, which I took a lot of lessons in how I'm applying it to Copernic Space. Which is, you know, how the system really works, right? So I got into it for how does digital content get distributed, monetized, and how does that procurement back to the original asset creators work, right? Yeah. And so you're going to see loads of really cool applications of this tech, but I think space is probably the most important and the biggest opportunity.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Well, look, Grant, absolutely fascinating. I know I could chat to you for ages, as you say, known each other for a while. But James, I'm conscious of time again. We're up against the clock. Have you any thoughts or anything else that you'd like to mention before we wrap up this week's show?
Well, I appreciate how he just ended his his appeal with the with what we do for a living, right? Distribution, copyright, royalties, and all that for entertainment. My question is, are you telling me I could get a CyberFM bumper sticker on a rover on the moon?
Sure. It's pricey, but yeah.
When I talk about price, you're telling me it's physically possible?
Yeah, totally. I could, you know, we can talk later and we could get that arranged pretty quickly for you.
And the payload that you spoke of earlier, though, was literally, like you said, somebody was sending a LTE, I guess a tower, for lack of a better word?
No, I think it's, there's some articles on it if you want to read it. I think it's more like a modem or whatever. It creates some sort of internet that they can send stuff back to the lunar lander, I think.
So, but piece by piece, you're building on a planet or on the moon?
Not us, piece by piece. We're creating the platform that enables the people who are building it to
that
build
will
it.
Allow for it. Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, I love this stuff. This is my deal. Johnny, good job, huh?
Yeah, really interesting. And Graham, we'll definitely get you back later in next year and get an update on this, because big fan of what you've been doing. And I like the fact you keep pushing the boundaries and you keep coming things on the face and what the hell are you doing now, Grant? And then sort of the penny drops and people begin to realize and you're growing and following. And it was interesting, your article this week in Digibytes, we actually just literally about an hour or so ago put on LinkedIn and amazed the number of responses on a global basis. You know, here I am based just out of London. You know, you're based, you're in Poland, aren't you, moment, Grant? I forgot to ask.
Yeah, I'm in Poland at the moment, but
I know you're pretty international. And James, there you are in good old USA.
I'm in a dirty south.
Yeah, and I think this typifies what this new market. It's not dependent or reliant or just being used by one country or one continent. It's right across the world. And actually now, as Grant's explaining, it's actually sort of out of this world as well. So Grant, thank you very much for coming on. And we'll watch with interest. And James, I'll leave it to you to wrap up this week's show then.
Thanks,
just
guys.
A quick reminder. Oh, wait, what are you going to say, Grant?
I was just going to say thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, this is my deal, man. You come on my show anytime, right? I actually know of two other space-type projects. They're not going to the moon, but I think is each company like yourself plugs in what they're best at. I do see that entire future economy and space, no pun intended, like an actual environment that's not on Earth. As each one of you put in your value, there's some crazy stuff going on in the future. So I appreciate all of what you're intended on doing for sure.
Appreciate it, James. And yeah, and happy to give you guys an update as we get into the public sale, you know, quarter one of next year. And so happy to give an update around that. But either way, thanks once again to the two of you. And Johnny, thanks for, you know, the kind words and the support.
Not at all.
Okay. All right. So, Johnny, the only other thing to say is congrats on another good show. Make sure everybody's downloading the app at cyber.fm. And if I may, since yesterday, when we are recording this, was Thanksgiving, that means later today, when you have already listened to this show, the Christmas channel will be live. Christmas music 24/7 on a dedicated channel, just like your typical mall in the United States. How cool is
shopping
that?
Shopping center in England.
There you go. It's going to be Christmas music 24/7 on CyberFM.
Fantastic. Okay. All right, James. Well, thanks again for co-hosting the show today. And obviously, if anyone wants to get a copy of Digital Bytes, then just click onto cyber.fm. Or you can get a hold of James Tiley or myself, Johnny Fry, on LinkedIn. But we'll be back next week with another edition of the Digital Bytes show. So thank you very much for listening.